Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kendall Roden, Cynthia Krang, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, Russell Young, and Sajid DeMello discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please visit our website at azpodcast.com.
Welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 253, being recorded on the 31st of October, 2018, with special guest James Baker. I'm Sajid, and on Skype with me, I have Cynthia, Kendall, and of course our special guest, James. And we'll give him a chance to introduce himself in just a minute. But before that, I guess happy Halloween to everybody in the States here. And let's get started with some of the updates. Kendall and Cynthia, are there any that you'd like to talk about?
Sure, so I can touch on one. There's a new app service integration feature for virtual networks. So this is basically going to allow, it doesn't affect any inbound traffic to the application, but will allow for your application to be able to access different resources that are through your ExpressRoute connection. So this is still in preview, but should really allow for better integration with your app service plan and some of the other resources that you have available through your ExpressRoute connection.
That's actually big news. I know that was a major pain point for a long time, that app services could not be connected to an ExpressRoute.
Right.
It could be connected to a VNet, but not an ExpressRoute connected VNet. So glad that's very welcome news, actually.
And there's actually, you don't have to do any additional configuration, basically beyond integrating with the ExpressRoute connected VNet. So it's definitely going to reduce pain points for a lot of our customers and internal employees alike.
Cool. And Cynthia, is there anyone that you want to talk about?
Yeah, so I'm a huge fan of the Azure Cloud Shell. Everyone should definitely go try it out. If you haven't yet, you can just launch it straight from the Azure portal. And now there's the option of both doing PowerShell or Bash, depending on which language you're more comfortable with or which command lines you're more familiar with. You can choose either. And it works really nicely with a lot of the Azure CLIs as well. So for me, it has been a very convenient tool to test out how some of the Azure CLIs would bend to either your resources in Azure or if there's any configuration you want to do to those resources. So if you haven't tried it out, definitely take a look.
Yeah, and what seems interesting in this update, Cynthia, is that, I think we had the PowerShell support before, but it was running on a Windows container because it would spin up a Windows, PowerShell command prompt. And as you know, most people have used it realize that takes a whole lot longer to spin up compared to the Bash. Bash Cloud Shell, which was starting up in a Linux VM on a Linux container. So right now what they've done is with this change, it appears that they're running the PowerShell in the Linux container itself using PowerShell, PowerShell core, the open source or the multi-platform version of PowerShell. And so it should be a lot faster. And that was it used to take almost a minute to start up, I remember, in the past. So hopefully it's back to its, 10-second time that it takes for the Bash shell. But that's a good one. I want to talk about the ACI update that we have. And again, in the spirit of virtual networks, ACI now supports, virtual networks. So if you have an ACI container and you want to connect to something in a virtual network, maybe you have your middle tier or et cetera in a particular network, you can associate it with that virtual network, which is really good for things like, for example, if you use AKS in a VNet, and AKS has a feature called the virtual kubelet, which allows you to use ACI containers on demand, sort of like a virtual node or on-demand node in the AKS. So you could now do that because it has that access to that VNet, which previously was not possible. Great. Okay, so that's a good rundown on the news. Well, let's turn the mic over to our special guest, James. James, please go ahead and introduce yourself. I think you've been on the show before, so you kind of know the drill, but go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us what you're doing these days in Azure, what you're passionate about, and we can take it from there.
Thanks, Sujit, and thanks, everyone, for having me here. I'm super excited to talk about our new Azure Data Lake Storage Gen 2 offering. We've been working on this for quite some time. It represents the convergence of our analytics storage offering, both Azure Data Lake Storage Gen 1 and the Blob Store, which both previously were used for durable stores for doing big data analytics on the Azure platform. And so now ADLS Gen 2 is the convergence of those, and it's bringing forward both the best qualities of both of those capabilities into this new sort of new redefining storage service, which we believe will really accelerate analytics and the value that customers can get out of their data on Azure. So I'm super excited to talk about it. I think customers are responding really, really well to it, and I think there's going to be a lot of momentum driven by that.
Now, we'll talk about the data lakes part in just a minute, but you mentioned that it works, it's kind of gotten together with Blob Storage. Does this change the Blob Storage offering in any way, or is that still stay the same?
So Blobs in itself is unchanged. It, the Blob Store is still available as a general purpose object storage solution. But we've built ADLS Gen 2 on top of the Blob Storage capability. And so what that means is that all of the qualities you love out of Blobs, such as the price, such as the availability, it's available as a Ring Zero service, it's available in all of the Azure regions, including all of the sovereign clouds. It has a huge ecosystem wrapped around it, so lots of tooling and all of those sort of things. They all get to apply to ADLS Gen 2. But we've added additional features on top of that. And so, for instance, we've built a hierarchical namespace on top of the Blob Storage service, which really does accelerate analytics workloads, but allows the Blob service to remain unchanged.
And does that matter? Blob Store does it use under the covers?
Yeah, so you're right. Under the covers, in the Blob Storage, we have three different types of blobs. We have page blobs, which is largely used for disks. VM disks are all stored as page blobs, and they have very good random read-write access qualities. They're a little bit more expensive, but they do the disk stuff very, very well. We also have block blobs, which is the most common form of blob. It's the sort of general purpose type of blob that allows you to write data in blocks. Obviously, you can read it within byte ranges of that, but it's sort of unconstrained. You can rewrite block blobs in any order you like, have uncommitted blocks and all sorts of interesting concepts around that. And then the third type of blob that we have is append blobs, which, as the name implies, you can just append to. You just simply, through one API call, you can append data to a blob and keep writing to us. ADLS Gen 2 uses block blobs. So what it does when it writes any data, it writes it as a block blob. It will still read data from page blobs or append blobs, but anytime you use ADLS Gen 2 to write data, it'll be writing to a block blob. Going forward, we're actually going to look to see if we can build an abstraction over those different types of blobs, simply because they're doing different things differently, but it means that you need to sort of understand ahead of time what you want to do with that data and make that determination of what sort of blob type. I think going forward, the notion of saying, okay, there's a file, and depending on what sort of IO pattern you're exhibiting onto that file, and maybe under the covers, we adapt that file or blob to a different type, but as far as the customer's concerned, it's just a file. And so we're looking to build that abstraction over the top. ADLS Gen 2 is the first step in that, where we don't talk about blob types, we just talk about files. Right now, as I say, when you write to it, it's only a block blob, and so we don't have different performance characteristics. For instance, if you wanted to do lots of low latency random read and write access, a page blob would be a better solution for that, but ADLS Gen 2 isn't built for those sorts of scenarios. They're built for analytic scenarios, which are generally large I/O reads and writes, driving huge throughputs, and block blobs are the best solution for that today.
This is Evan, and I apologize for being late. And you may have alluded to this a little bit earlier, but the goal to shift to this is to simplify life for, well, I guess for customers, it really doesn't matter whether they use one or two. The abstraction is at the storage layer. Like, what does it bring the customer that we've got that version? Or when you say Gen 2, it's really the other stuff that we're able to implement down the road because of that switch. Like, I guess I'm trying to understand, like, that's one of the first things we talk about when we talk about Gen 2, but what does that ultimately mean for customers that we're just sitting on standard blob storage?
And so across the board, it does mean simplification for customers. That, you know, we got a message very clearly saying, oh, it's great that you've got a storage service dedicated for analytics, but because it's cut off from, you know, part of the, for instance, blob ecosystem, now you're making me make a difficult choice between do I want the rich ecosystem or do I want the dedicated analytics capability? And so we heard that clearly from customers and we said, look, let's not make a choice. Let's have a choice of one. And that one choice goes and serves all of those considerations. As I say, the best qualities from both of those contributing services come into ADLS Gen 2. And from the customer's perspective, it means there's one destination for their analytics data. It becomes ADLS Gen 2. The other services will still be available. And certainly for ADLS Gen 1, we're not deprecating it or retiring it. While customers are still successfully working with Gen 1, we will continue to support them. But going forward, there's going to be a very clear message that if you want to do analytics on Azure, there's a choice of one. It's ADLS Gen 2, and it's bringing it doesn't make you make the difficult choices and compromises or trade-offs, because it's bringing those qualities forward. Yeah, go on
in. I was going to say that makes perfect sense because my customer actually had, we had that very difficult conversation. Well, where should we put our stuff? Well, do you want to do X? Do you want to do Y? And they actually ended up, they copy data between the two, right? For some scenarios. And so that makes perfect sense to me. Like we're eliminating that upfront choice that you have to make or that operational complexity. Obviously it enables other things, but that's kind of one of the core goals.
Yeah. And to a meta point, we're driving out all of these data silos that might appear across the platform. And certainly, you know, Azure's not alone in this. There's data silos on all of the clouds and, you know, even on-prem people create data silos. And so where we really want to get to is a notion where there are no silos. There's a data storage or a data lake. That is the concept of the data lake. And, you know, all of that data interops with itself. You know, you can bring a variety of tools to that one set of data. And then implicit with that is all of the cataloging and data management side of things, which will be downstream for us. But that's part of it. And so we build up this sort of rich and well understood and sort of robust enterprise data lake environment, where you don't have to make trade-offs. That one data lake does all things to, you know, anything you want to do with the data, we're supporting it. And in a lot of cases where we're special casing support for, you know, the way that you might access it through an analytics cube, or, you know, we're special casing it because you want a lot of key value data or something like that. All of those scenarios, which do present different IO patterns, we have to go and not treat it like a general purpose storage solution. We have to treat it as, you know, special casing all of these scenarios. And so that's what we're doing with ADLS Gen 2. We're starting that journey by saying, okay, all of the big data frameworks, the Hadoop-based frameworks, the Databrixes and Sparks of the world, let's go and really deeply understand their I/O patterns and make that, really excel at those. And then we'll expand that to say, okay, what are some of the other I/O patterns that customers want to present to their data, for instance, for machine learning or, for some of these very rich visualization scenarios or even HPC scenarios. How do those I/O patterns differ and what do we have to do special for those? And we will do those special things.
So, James, I have a question for you. With Azure Data Lake Storage Gen 2 really being at the core of the Azure Analytics workflow, for customers who are just starting to build their real-time analytics architectures and that are just now getting into really being able to leverage all of the intricacies of the data that they have, and especially at that, in large quantities, what are some of the best practices for really getting started on that journey to building a rich analytic workflow? Because obviously that takes so many different steps and integration. So what are some of, I guess, the key factors to consider as you begin that journey to really trying to leverage, your data in more effective ways?
Yeah. I mean, it's a great consideration because, putting this thought in up front is fairly critical to successfully executing on these data lake visions and really getting the maximum value out of the data. And one of the common themes through all of this big data is that the data's, the scale of the data is big. And, sometimes you have to deal with physics as a barrier to being able to do what you need to do. And so while, we might have transitioned from a world where maybe data was held in a relational data warehouse or something like that, and we've exceeded the scale capabilities or the constraints of those environments, and we've moved into a semi-structured big data world, which the scale is one of the chief, barriers, you have to design for scale. And so a lot of the times that means having a good partitioning strategy up front. And so that's part data model, part sort of ingestion technique, part consumption model that influences the partitioning strategy. But at the end of the day, a good partitioning strategy, it quite often means the difference between success or failure of an end-to-end pipeline. So that sort of stuff is key to sort of a consideration up front. Other considerations is, how do I physically ingest my data? If my data is born in on-prem, how do I move that through maybe my on-prem infrastructure into the cloud? What are the best practices? If maybe I'm doing large migrations from on-prem, what are the ways that I move potentially multi-petabyte data sets into the cloud? Do I put it over the wire? There's lots of interesting techniques about that. Do I use an appliance, something like DataBox, to move that data? These are all considerations. Even data that originates in the cloud or online still needs physics and the ingestion of the physics of the ingestion as a consideration when you're designing these things. Some of the other aspects you've got to design for are robustness and disaster recovery and high availability, because these, the more and more enterprises become dependent on having good insights from their data, and that drives their day-to-day decisions. If they have an outage for whatever reason, does that mean the business stops? Hopefully not. And so you have to design for high availability. How do I sort of maybe make redundant copies of my data so that if I lose a zone or I lose a data center entirely, what goes on there? Or if I have a data corruption, how do you overcome those sorts of things? So these are maybe not the sexiest of design considerations, but are critical to getting, a successful, durable, sustainable, and scalable sort of platform in place. And so they're certainly the things that we think about when we're building out services such as ADLS Gen 2 and the way that we integrate with the other platform services on Azure.
So, James, I'm really following on that. Now that a lot of enterprises are really trying to utilize a lot of data, could you touch on the security aspect of utilizing ADLS Gen 2 and how users can kind of maximize how they're securing their data when they utilize this product?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a great question because I've been in big data for 6 years now. When we first started along some of these early journeys, just being able to deal with the scale of the data was the first and only concern, and security was a very secondary consideration. Right now, the data that we're pushing through these analytics pipelines are driving the business. They're key to the success of the business. And so, they become the keys to the kingdom and you want to secure it. And, when we've built ADLS Gen 2, we've added the ability to have very fine-grained access control lists on the data. It's a POSIX-compliant mechanism whereby you put permissions on directories, the files created in those directories automatically propagate those permissions to them, and so on like that. That works very nicely with the big data analytics frameworks that anticipate or expect POSIX style or POSIX compliant permissions. And so we've given that sort of mechanism. It's all anchored through or all of the principles are derived from Azure Active Directory using OAuth bearer tokens. And so we've really gone to a sort of a standard, a cloud best practice way of securing or authorizing the data. But securing the data is much more than just pure authorization. And so what you need is to make sure that your data is encrypted. And so, we've given an ability to, all data is encrypted at rest and in transit by default in ADLS Gen 2. We've even added a feature where a customer can bring their own encryption key, store that in Key Vault, and use that to encrypt the data. We're even adding features where you'll be able to have a key per container or file system, as we call it, and use different encryption keys if that's the way that you want to get the level of protection. Other things we've got are transport level security. So, one of the scary things is that you're putting the keys to the kingdom potentially on a publicly addressable IP endpoint. And so if someone can hack hard enough, maybe they get in there. And so one of the ways we mitigate that is by putting transport layer protections in there. That means storage firewalls, VNet service endpoints that physically mean at the transport layer, you can only get to that data if you're coming from a specific VNet or an authorized service. And so lots of these things are all in the spectrum of security. We certainly think of that as an essential item to enable enterprises to take a deep dependency on all of these services and build and sort of empower their organizations with a data-driven transformation. And you can't do that without being able to secure and entrust your data.
And what are some of the newer use cases that you think will be enabled through the V2 integration? I know there's a bunch of services in Azure that can directly leverage data lakes, and I suppose that they'll just work with data lakes V2 transparently. But are there any new use cases that you think will be opened up with this feature now?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question because there is part of it of just improving the sort of base scenarios that we've got. We've got a set of sort of core scenarios that we think of. One of them is what we call modern data warehousing. So, data warehousing and BI pipelines aren't necessarily a new concept, and they're not going away. But, in the cloud and at the scale of data, the sort of traditional approaches to that aren't going to be scalable enough. And so, you know, sort of modern data warehousing achieves the same scenario, but does it in a way that deals with the scale, deals with the sort of diversity of the data, deals with the new velocity of the data. And so, you know, again, as you say, it's about integrating with other engines on the platform, other services, but making things like a modern data warehouse go through. And so that's very much how we talk about the value that customers will get when they embrace ADLS Gen 2. We talk about them in scenarios. So modern data warehousing is one. Advanced analytics, where, you know, I was recently at a conference, just working the booth, just talking to customers, and every customer started the conversation with, tell me what I can do in machine learning and AI to get more value out of my data. And so customers are really pivoting towards this. And so we've got a dedicated scenario for advanced analytics, which incorporates AI and machine learning, and sort of building through that. And that involves things like Databricks and Spark ML to go and drive our machine learning based aspects, training your models, scoring your models, that sort of stuff coming through. So there are a set of maybe they're existing scenarios, maybe they're new scenarios. You know, probably the machine learning scenarios are sort of really getting onto the newer side. They're more nascent. But you know, it's basically, you know, not necessarily solving different problems in different ways, but solving the existing problems in a much more performant way. And so therefore that leads to a cost reduction in a much more secure way, and so therefore enterprises can take that dependency in a much more sort of approachable and manageable way. And so, you know, again, enterprises, the one fear that they have when they embark on data lake projects is that it's going to turn into a data swamp. And so they need management mechanisms to go and do that.
Got it. Okay, that's cool. Very good. Nice update on the service there. So, I don't know, any further questions for James? I know he's already given us a lot of information about this.
No, this was great. I am determined to avoid the data swamp going forward.
Well, James, thank you very much for coming on the show. And, you know, if you have any links or things you want to share with our customers, with our listeners, please send them over to me, and we'll add them along with the, you know, with the recording of this particular episode.
Yep, I will do. I'm going to just add, we're currently getting towards the end of our preview period for ADLS Gen 2. Our plan is to go GA by the end of this calendar year. And so we're busily driving towards that. We're still taking on preview customers. And so if folks want to get in there, I'll send a link on how to get into the preview. We'd certainly welcome you there. But once we go GA, we'll really be having a high push around this. And so, you know, we'd love to see all of your listeners coming in, at least kicking the tires, trying it out and seeing the value that they can get through building these rich analytics engines or pipelines on Azure.
Excellent. Okay. Well, thank you for that. And we'll thank you for coming on the show, and we'll hope to have you again in a future episode.
ADLS Gen 3, right?
No, don't say that. No.
But you guys have to come up with a better name, though. You know, ADLS V2 is a mouthful, okay? I got to say that.
Okay. Thanks, James.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Okay, guys.
Everyone.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.